Welcome to episode number 5 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. It's been another big week in running and we're here to put a bit of a podcast show together talking all things running. Thanks for joining me, Brad and Julian.
Lads.
Thank you, Brady.
Back again. 5 episodes down. Another big week of training from both you boys, I'm hoping.
Not on this end. Brad's got some good stuff out there.
Yeah, done all right this week, but I've had Ballarat-type weather.
Yeah, well, weather. I think we've all been hit with some pretty feral weather the last few days. But, Julian, we might start with you this week. I think we started with Brad last week. Do you want to maybe talk us through your week? Last we heard, you were going down to Melbourne midweek for a conference looking shoes, yeah?
Yeah, that happened. Always a big few days down there and kind of sapped me of energy. The start of the week was quite good, luckily, because the back half of the week was pretty average. We have a good group on Mondays. We always meet the same spot. On a Monday arvo, go roll around, talk some absolute shit. It's hilarious. Skillsy's back, Nate Hardigan's back in the group after he officially beat cancer in 7 weeks, which he reminds us about every 10 minutes. He's come back with some size about him, spent a bit of time in the gym. So pretty much like 90% of the runners taking piss out of him. And then the other 10% is him taking the piss out of himself, which is pretty good, pretty consistent jokes. You'll hear the same one about 4 times throughout the run. So that was good. Good run. Tuesday went down the track. I think it was pretty hot if I remember. Real hot.
Hot day.
We met up with, Jared, fella from Geelong. He did some 200s and I did a session, 2x1K with a decent rest and then 6x500. The idea for me was to run a bit faster than 5K pace. Well, for me anyway. And I got that done. It was quite interesting to watch. Like I had to look at my heart rate through each rest period, and I took a decent rest after the 1K reps. I took 3 minutes, and so that's a fair rest. But I got my heart rate well down during those. And it was still a difficult rep to get through. But then during the 500s, I slowly watched my heart rate not actually decrease during the rest. And so by the last one, I would finish the rep, look at my heart rate, and then in 90 seconds time, look at it again, and it would only have dropped by about 10 beats. And then you're basically starting the workout starting the next rep in lactic zone already, in threshold area.
Give us some stats, Julian, just as listeners at home wondering what kind of heart rate we're talking for an elite athlete over here. What was it dropping to?
After the 1K, as it was back down to like 115 at the end of the rest. And then I actually didn't look at what it was during the rep, but I didn't, that didn't interest me. I was interested in the recovery. And then when I was starting my next reps towards the end of the 500s, it was still up around 145. So it just would not go down. And it was a tough session. I was glad to get that done. But it's interesting to watch. I like to see that stuff sometimes.
Shirt off?
I don't think I even wore a shirt at work that day. It was so hot.
did you find doing the 5K brought you up a little bit to make the sessions feel a bit better?
No, I didn't actually. No. I'm still battling away there.
It's a good session though. I liked it.
It was a tough session. I think I'm going to come back to that one for sure. And just, I'm going to try to hit the same splits, but feel a lot better doing it. Cause I kept everything even. I didn't blow up, except if you looked at the effort level involved in each rep, they certainly got harder and I would have liked to keep it a little bit more even.
Yeah.
Wednesday went out. This is when things started to turn a little for me. Wednesday morning, went out for a longish run. It was supposed to be about 20K. And then I I felt like I was working the entire way, and I was battling. I got home, I was sweating the house down. I just didn't go very well. Feel like I don't know whether I didn't eat enough the night before for dinner, and I was all kind of depleted already when I started. But I really struggled during that run, and that it's almost like a tipping point for the rest of the week, because I went for a run later that afternoon, and it was okay. I just ticked along, but then I went up to Melbourne and went to the conference, and the next morning, like the conference. Basically, our conference is not like a massive conference that you may have seen in the past. It's every one of the store owners, and there's now 9 stores come together for, we rent a house or we Airbnb a house for 2 days, and we set up a room where all the brands come and present their product for second half of 2018. And we get an idea of what's coming in. It allows us to decide on what products that we range in our store. And although that sounds fantastic, it's actually quite draining when you have showing after showing after showing, and it's all focus and attention and talking and discussion. And by the time you get to the end of the day, you're pretty cooked. And then it's normally beers after that. So I haven't really been drinking. Oh, I mean, I drink every day, but I haven't had a session of drinking for a while. So that Wednesday night when we got up there, I had a few too many, woke up rough Thursday, but had to run quite early. So I got out of there early with one of the other guys, the Sunshine Coast man, Brad, and we went for a jog around Studley Park. It was good. He's super unfit, so that was nice. Got a bit of confidence. And then Thursday arvo again, ran with Bree and Brad, and it was just easy running, but it was just hard to get through. Friday morning, like after a big Thursday night, we're out till, I don't think I got to sleep till 1, and then I had this crazy night of sleep where I had like night terrors or something. It was bizarre. I basically slept for about an hour and then woke up at 5:45 out to run at 6 and just like sweated the house down. It was dreadful. And I haven't had a good run since, basically. I was supposed to run Friday night, couldn't, just too cooked. Saturday morning, woke up, was supposed to run, didn't. Got to Saturday arvo, weather was terrible, as it was everywhere. And I needed to get a session done, so I jumped on the treadie at work in the store, afterwards shut, and I did 6K tempo at 3:12 per kilometre, apparently. I say apparently because all I have to go on is what the treadmill says there. There's no GPS or anything. So chucked it on 18.7, which the internet told me was 3:12s, and knocked out 20 minutes. And then that felt pretty good. Treadmill definitely feels like it's easier to get, like it's not as fast as it would be if you're outside. Feels like it's a little bit like a cheat way to get the workout in. Yeah, so that was Saturday night, and then Sunday morning wanted to go a bit longer. I want to keep one longer run in per month, so I just don't lose that that real long run strength. And I went 33 or 34 and pulled up super sore from it, like really sore through the hips, lower back, and just ended up doing like 145K or something for the week, but it was just a really hard way to get there. And I need something to click because I'm just like, I've went back to, I think I'm going to spend a week just running singles this week and try to get a bit of pop back in my legs and just take the pressure off a bit. End of week.
Yeah, moose a bit off the rails midweek and then a bit sore second half of the week.
Wasn't a good week for training. And then that motivation of like, you battle through the entire Ballarat winter, and you're copping this shit in December. That's bullshit.
It was like 11 degrees there yesterday. I googled it.
Yeah, exactly. And in the morning, 4 degrees or something. I'm like, this isn't cool. Now that would have been a good day in winter, and now it's like still putting up with this.
Yeah, pretty contrasting. Early in the week, super hot, and then cold, wet, and windy.
Yeah, average running weather, that's for sure. Mm.
Brad Croker, over to you. Give us a bit of a rundown.
Yeah, before I start, just chin up, Julian. Just think long term, mate. You'll be right. You didn't miss a day of running. You still got so, all good.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
Very encouraging.
So my week started off pretty easy just because I came off the back of that long run with a 5K tempo at the end. So when I do that, I normally don't do a session then till Wednesday. So Monday was just 45 minutes. Tuesday, just 60 minutes in the morning and 35 in the afternoon. Then Wednesday, I was meant to go early because it was going to be hot, but I'm not real good in the mornings, and I just decided to sleep in and cop the hot weather in the afternoon. And so Viv came out with me on the bike for part of it, more so just so I had a drink because I was out in the bush. And the session was a 60-minute tempo over rolling hills, and the idea was to run the hills really hard and sort of try and recover a little bit on the downs and the flats. But I guess when it's 28 degrees, you know, the back end of that session becomes pretty hard. So ended up running 3:32s for 60 minutes. So that was pretty much bang on 17K. And I was really happy with it, just considering the conditions and the hills. And felt like there was about a couple of times where I felt like stopping, probably at 10K, 12K, 14K, and then got over the top of this last big climb at sort of 15K, and was really surprised that I was able to get rolling and run. I think it was like low 3:20s and then like a 3 sort of 14 last K. So that was encouraging, and that was off a 10-minute warm-up and then a 20-minute cool-down. So that was 24K for the session. Just an easy 70 minutes on Thursday. Friday did 90 minutes. At sort of 4:12, so it was just over 21K. And then Saturday, the weather was just foul here, and I was meant to do a session of 4 30-second efforts off 30 seconds float, 4 60-second efforts off 30 seconds or 45 seconds float, and then 4 2-minuters off 1-minute float. So that idea of doing something a bit quicker early off a short recovery and then making the 2 minutes really hard, but all the paths were just flooded. So I just changed the session to 12 by 1 minute off 30 seconds recovery, because I figured that doing 12 reps with that short recovery, the back end would be quite challenging. And I put that off until late in the afternoon just because I was hoping the weather would get better. But it ended up being not too bad. I averaged 255 kilometre pace for the 1 minuters, and not really sure what I was doing for the 30s, but averaged 3:19s for the session. And then Sunday, got out 2:20 at 4:06s. And that was another pretty miserable day. The last 5Ks just gradual uphill into like a 30K headwind. And I was still able to sort of run sub fours doing that, like working hard, but feeling strong. So, it was 146K for the week. So nothing special. I'm in reasonable shape, I think. Ticked over 6,000 kilometres for the year, which will be my biggest year ever. So that's a good sign. So that's me.
134 average heart rate for that long run. It's pretty good going.
Yeah.
I looked at that actually.
Over hills and at 4 minute pace.
Yeah, so I've gone back to using the actual strap.
Yeah.
So I'm reasonably confident that the heart rate's sort of accurate. I'm finding at the moment the first 9K of my long runs are just ordinary. Like my hips, it takes that long for my hips to sort of unlock, and I guess as I'm getting older. And but then after I sort of get through that first hour, I start to feel pretty good. So, heart rate's been really, really low, which is good, I guess.
It's a good Tuesday workout.
Oh, the Wednesday one?
Wednesday, yeah, that hill run.
Jeez. Yeah, because I did a similar session the week after I got back from Europe, and I averaged 3:45 for that hour and was stuffed. And it was about probably 6 degrees hotter on Wednesday than it was back then. I did 20K a couple of weeks ago, but that was in the morning, so it was a lot cooler. So I think for me and trying to build strength, I think those sessions will really help me. They're certainly tough, but I've got nothing to compare it to, which is good as well. So I'm not reading into these sessions too much.
Yeah, you're fit though. You got to find a race. Got to get you somewhere. Just give us a benchmark.
Yeah. Well, Park. So I've got a big week this week. I'm going to hit hopefully 170 to 180. Just a lot of strength stuff, and then I'll have an easier week next week, and I'll bang out a park run next Saturday. Yeah, Saturday week.
Yeah, because the marathon's only 12 weeks away or something, isn't it?
So, right. But I'm trying to, like, I learnt my lesson before Berlin. I'm trying not to, like, I'm trying to put the marathon out of my mind at the moment, because as soon as it's in front of my mind, I'm like, all right, now I need to start hitting these sessions, and I don't want to do that yet. So I'm just ticking through the weeks without really counting how far it is to Biwa.
Good. He's learned, I think, Julian. He's picked up a few pointers from last time around.
Yeah, this podcast helped everyone.
I'm liking him. I reckon he's fit and he's ready to launch as well. I've got good feelings about this marathon build-up for you, Brad.
Don't jinx me. Remember the last time you said, oh, can one of you boys just fake an injury for this podcast in the road to Berlin, and the next week I was out? Yeah. So
numbers jumped, though. It was good for the numbers. My week was pretty standard. Got out for 8K Monday night. A few of the boys I run with were just running way too fast on Monday and dropped the hammer. I think we averaged 4 minutes 13, which is way too fast for a Monday. Easy jog. Tuesday morning out for 6.8K. Then the afternoon I did 6 500s in 124 to 125 off a minute jog. So the minute jog was pretty easy, back to the 100-meter start line to start the 500-meters rep. That was quite difficult. When I got home and put that on Strava, I was pretty cooked, and Julian pretty much did the same session but with 2x1K as before that. So, that's why I thought Julian's session was pretty impressive, because I knew how hard those 500-meter reps were. Wednesday, easy 16K at 5:30, I think it was, just to get out and just tip the legs over. All my jogging recently has just been really slow, so like 4:40s, that was at 4:37, just concentrating on heart rate and just kind of rolling the off days, so I feel good on the on days. Got out for 8K easy in the afternoon on Wednesday night. Carly did her first Echuca triathlon, so she was in the river swimming and then out the road and then on the run, so jogged around and watched her a bit, which was good. Thursday, had a massive day at work, didn't get out for my session until I think it was about 8:15, it's telling me here on Strava, and the session was 10 by 1 minutes hard with 30 seconds float. Really positive, went through 15 minutes, looked down at the watch and I think that was 4.97k or something like that on the Garmin, so I rounded it up and just kept jogging for the last 5 seconds and made it a 15:03 5k, which was good. Out the industrial estate, got chased by some dogs. I'd never been out the industrial estate that late at night. There's a couple of dogs that guard a couple of the factories, and come around one corner, and I think I was about 5 reps in, so I was starting to get pretty cooked, and these dogs just chased me. So I really had to put the hammer down to drop a couple of the dogs. I think they were all talk though. They kind of wanted to get close to me, but they could have easily taken me leg off if they wanted to, but they were just yapping away, just to scare me. So I was pretty happy with that session, because I've done that one a few times in the past, and whenever I've kind of hit 15-minute 5Ks in there, I know I'm in pretty good shape. Back in those 4% shoes again. They're bloody amazing. I love them. Every time I put them on, it just feels good. Easy.
What size are you?
Size 8.
Ooh, tough one.
Well, yeah, I could be 8 or an 8.5. I don't know. We've had this conversation before. I'm size 8.5 in my joggers, but I wear a size 8 of those and they feel all right. Friday afternoon, got out for 15K, pretty easy at 4:33s. and then Saturday did a session, which was in that terrible, didn't kind of rain. We had heaps of rain on Friday night, so everything was pretty flooded, but out the industrial estate was in really good condition, just good roads out there that just tackle the weather really well. But it was like 30K wins, so the session was 3K, 2K, 3x1K, and yeah, hit 8:57 for the 3K, 6:03 for the 2K, 2:57, 3:02, 2:54. But it was more of a kind of fartlek because the industrial state's kind of long straights. So I'd be running 3:20 going one way, and then I'd hit the tailwind and kind of try and run 3:40 pace just to balance it out at kind of 3 minute K pace. It was just one of those brutal sessions that had to really dig deep, wanted to pull out a couple of times and just write it off as a session wasn't going to happen, but hardened up and got it through. Wore my Steigen singlet from a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that was actually going to like rip when I was running into the headwind. It just felt like this singlet's about to rip straight off me because there's not much of it, and the wind was pretty pretty heavy. So that was, yeah, 3 minutes recovery after the 3K, 2 minutes after the, no, 2.5 minutes after the 2K, and then 90 seconds after the 1K. And then got out for 30K yesterday morning. First time back at 30K. 4:28, just tried to keep the heart rate about 130, 135, which was good. So 156, I think, for the week. So good mileage. Good mileage, some good sessions, kind of three pretty decent sessions, pretty speedy sessions, and happy with the way things are tracking. Just not really sure if I'm going to commit to this like B1 marathon yet, though. 12 weeks away, and yeah, I don't know. I'd love to pick your boys' brains on it. It just feels like it's come around way too soon. Thoughts?
Mate, you're in good shape. Like, I think if you're
five,
like,
or 10, though.
Yeah, but when you look at Julian, when he does a marathon prep, he tries to get himself in good five and like focuses on the short stuff initially, and then uses the last 10 weeks as the, you know, where you start to add the marathon specific stuff. I'm amazed at how you get yourself up for sessions. Like, you look at that 10x1 minute hard with 30 seconds float. Like, you ran a 5K on the track in 14:51 in, what, US Spikes?
Yeah, it wore Spikes.
And you're out on the road and you're running almost the same pace in training. And, like, here I was thinking that my 12 1-minute is off 30 seconds, like, standing recovery at 2:55 was good, but like, you've absolutely smashed it, and like, I just couldn't do that in training. I don't think I just couldn't get myself up for it. So like, that session's amazing. You're in good shape.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm in good shape. I'm liking the shape I'm in, but I'm just a bit, I don't know, like, I just remember the Berlin build up seemed to go forever. Then I'm like, you know, take the 2 weeks out to taper for BWA, and it's like 10 weeks of training. Do you reckon I've got it, wise man, if I kick into gear soon?
I think you need to want to do it for starters. Like, you, it has to be something that you're driven towards. Otherwise, you won't do it. And so, if, like, I know that I can't go into a marathon half cocked. It has to be, I have to look at it and I have to really want it, because those sessions that you do to get yourself marathon fit, they take a lot of motivation. And for me, I, like, if I was looking at a marathon 12 weeks out going, oh, I could do it, I reckon I could do it, it's not about whether you could do it. Like, you can do it. 12 weeks when you're this fit at the moment, that's plenty of time. But it's whether you can get yourself up for another round so close to the last round of marathon sessions and marathon weeks, which is, I need to do that once a year because of how much it takes out of me. Basically,
I think that's what it is. I don't know if I'm 100% motivated to do the work and then go. I think after Berlin, because it's such a massive event, you know, going to Lake BWA Marathon just doesn't have the same appeal.
Yeah, well, that's what you have to decide, because even like during like a session, you 5x5K, you need to be like, thinking about that race. I thought about that race, like Berlin, every single day for like 16 weeks. If it's not a big priority for you, I just don't think it'll work out that well.
And I think because I'm having fun with these sessions at the moment, and I kind of, I don't know, I'd be happy to do a bit of track and just jump in races and not have to switch off to the world and just grind away, maybe. I don't know. I'm sounding pretty negative around B-Way here.
Yeah, you'd probably just have to think about it and decide.
Yeah.
You don't have to decide yet. Like, you throw a few more longer runs in. You got 2 more weeks before you really need to get heavy in the marathon stuff, so...
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think you need to rush the decision, but
yeah, it's definitely something I'm thinking about, looking at entry and flights, and I don't know. I'm thinking, how do you reckon we could get into London with a 2:20:15?
Outside of the lottery.
Yeah, like just try and get on that championship start. Because I'm thinking if something was April, like 4 weeks after, I could kind of wait a bit longer and be more motivated to run a London marathon than BWA.
I think like you have to kind of join an athletics club or something over there and you get a bit more of it. Like if you, I'm not exactly sure, don't take my word for it, but there's a way in through local athletics over there when you're like a club runner and you're quite a good club runner. So you'll just have to have a look. I'm pretty sure that was one route to get into that race.
Yeah. Need to be a 2:18:30 man, Brad, and get myself in.
Yeah,
they called me. I said no.
Talking about big marathons, boys, there was a Fukuoka marathon was yesterday. Did you catch any of the action?
No, I couldn't get anything working.
Yeah, neither could I. Disappointing. Disappointing. You read up on it today, though. There's plenty of news around it.
Yeah, I did. I've read a bit. I've talked to a few people.
Yeah. For people that don't know, Sondre Mohan. Made history, smashed a European record in the marathon to win Fukuoka in 2 hours, 5 minutes and 48 seconds. Come out of nowhere, this guy. He was a 2:12 marathoner on debut, ran 2:14 at the Rio Olympics, 2:10 at Hanover Marathon at the start of the year, and then goes out and bangs out a 2:05. So pretty amazing, pretty eyebrow-raising. That rhymes. I've been doing poetry at school this last week, actually. But been working with Renata Canova, been laying real low in Kenya and training over there, supposedly, and, made it look easy. Sat with for the first 30K and then went and kicked down the last 12K at 2:03K pace.
Yeah, that's big dog work right there.
Mm, that's huge, isn't it? Like, yeah. That's a huge run. I actually didn't realize he'd ran so fast. Our man from Norway, if you can remember the Road to Berlin marathon podcast series, Christian from Norway, he's pretty excited over there. Pretty big news for Norwegians.
Mm, yeah. Who was it that there was an English commentator, I was told today, that he was commentating on one of the feeds or something, or he basically made a comment about how suspect this is, basically.
Really?
I can't remember his name. I got told his name today.
Dave Bedford?
It was like Mike someone, I think. I can't remember. I was going to Google it, but I forgot.
Yeah.
And yeah, he pretty much called it out as it is. Like, guy never really runs faster than 28 minutes before. You won like a under 23 silver medal at 10,000 meters one time, gets injured a bit, but then goes to Kenya and becomes a world beater. I mean, there's obviously question marks over that. There's no doubt about it. Whether he is or he isn't doping, there's question marks on it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, he ran that awesome half marathon at Valencia half marathon, what, maybe 6 weeks ago? He went from a 62-minute guy to a 59-minute guy. So he kind of showed a bit there, and then it just come out and absolutely smashed this one. But, it was a pretty talented junior, as you said, kind of a 13:20 guy, I think. He went to the World Champs in the 5K, got ran out in the finals. Just kind of, I don't know, to run 2:05, like, that's insane. 2:05:48.
Yeah. Especially
7-minute improvement at that level is massive. You know, like 7 minutes sort of at our level is, you know.
Yeah, well, Julian did that, 2:25 to 2:18.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're talking, you know, 212 or whatever, 210 is world class as it is. To take another 7 minutes off that in a year, it's pretty pretty amazing.
Super impressive. It's just, I didn't see it at all. I just saw some highlights this morning, but yeah, it looked like he ran away from it. Stephen Kiprotich was second, the Ugandan, who's an Olympic gold medalist, I reckon, back in the day. And Sunguru Osako from Japan, Nike Oregon Project boy, wore the hat the whole way, 207.19, which is a Nike Oregon Project record. So wonder what his stable mates, kind of Galen Rupp and Dathan Ritzenhine, those kind of guys are thinking about that. Not that Dathan's there anymore, but still, it's knocked off some pretty good people in that stable.
Yeah. I think it was the quickest Japanese time in the last 15 years or something. I read somewhere that it was, fastest run by a Japanese guy in a long time.
It's pretty good because I've had all those guys kind of running 2.9s, 2.10s, but to see someone kind of break through a bit and start running, 207 lows, getting down the business end.
Yeah.
Couple of Aussies over there. Tom DeCanto, 2.14.58, which is a pretty decent run. I think his best was probably 2.20-ish at Melbourne when he won it last year. And Dion, boys, help me out with the pronunciation of Dion's last name.
Finocchiaro.
That's it. Good work. 2.28. Just talking to him a bit today, I reckon he'd be a bit disappointed with that run. But, had a crack at it early. Looked good. Thought he kind of, his speed at the state 5K was pretty impressive and thought he might have had a bit of a good one, bit of a blinder there. But the marathon's a beast and, taking another casualty.
I always say if you're running a great 5K a week out, 2 weeks out from a marathon, you've done something wrong in your training. Like, you're focused on the wrong things. You shouldn't be, really. You should be running really well over 42K. You should be honed in on the two-hour 20 mark, and you should nail that. Even a half marathon, like guys that run awesome half marathons a month out, I guess this other bloke kind of showed, the Norwegian dude showed you can do it pretty well. But if you're really focused on the marathon, you're training a different system.
Yeah, you told me that leading into Berlin when I was running some pretty poor 5Ks, couldn't get under 15 minutes, and I took a lot of confidence in that. So I'm going to back you on that one. But pretty good race. It's definitely on the bucket list, Fukuoka, I reckon. It looks pretty crazy over there. Brett Robertson, an Australian boy, paced it 23K, just banged out 23.259 kilometres. So he's obviously in pretty good shape to be able to fulfil that job.
That was awesome. That was actually probably the most... No. Thomas's run was fantastic. But geez, to run that pace so evenly at the front of a major marathon like that, that was really impressive. I'm excited for what he's going to do soon.
Well, he did talk about stepping up early, didn't he? Did I read an article or a blog on him not so long ago saying that he thought it was a bit of a waste that people step up at the end of their... running career to the marathon? Do you reckon he could be a chance to step up early?
Yeah, I read that. I read that article as well. Where I think it's something to do with the sub too. Has sort of inspired him to want to have a crack at the marathon.
It makes sense. That's what, these guys aren't making a killing racing on the track. Whereas they could come out and have a really solid financial or good career running marathons and road races.
Watch your space. Be good to see some young blood come through.
Yeah.
Would it be? How old would he be?
He's 26.
Real young blood. New South Wales state champs, Brad. Disappointed I didn't see your name on the start list. This would have been a perfect race for you.
Yeah, I thought, normally it's in February, and so I thought, I'll do it if it's in February. And then I looked a couple of weeks ago and saw 2nd of December. I'm like, nah. Anyway, so it wasn't live streamed, but Ed Goddard, who finished 2nd at National Cross, won the race in 14.11. Canberra boy Josh Tawley was 2nd in 14.15, so he's only 18, so that's a pretty good run. And Bryce Cole Sinclair was 3rd in 14.16, I think I saw the splits. I think he ran a 55-second last 400 or something to finish 3rd, which is pretty impressive.
55?
And then, yeah.
Mo Farah stuff.
Yeah, and then Matt Hudson was fourth in 14:17. So, and then the women's race, Marnie Ponton, it won the race in 16:02. Jenny Blundell, 16:06 for second, and Lara Hamilton, third in 16:47. And then just in the B race, I mentioned, I don't know, just last week or the week before, that Sean Crichton, as a 50-year-old, ran 9:07 for 3K. He came out at New South Wales 5 and broke the Australian over 50s 5K record, running 15:34. So I spoke to him today, and yeah, he was pretty stoked with it because he'd missed the week leading up with some hip flexor issues, but got through the race, and yeah, so now he's onto the trying to have a crack at the 10K record in a few weeks' time.
Down at Steigen.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so the world record's 14:52. I asked him whether he thought he was a chance of that, and he reckons 15:15 is probably about his limit. So yeah, anyway, so that was a great run from him.
There's an interview of him coming up at the end of the show, so stick around for that. Next bit of news, boys. Kipchoge announced to run London Marathon. Did you see the promo? Yeah. See the little video they put out?
No, didn't see it.
Check it out. He's sitting in a cinema watching highlights of himself winning London Marathon, wearing like those London Marathon skivvies. You know those skivvies they always put him in, like the press releases? It's
no.
Oh, you don't. You haven't seen London Marathon do their press conferences before.
No.
You guys have got to get ahead of the game a bit. It's pretty.
I'm not helping you out here.
Yeah, I'm just sinking real quick. It was a good little promo. Just saying he's back, and they're talking it up. But they're talking like the headlines about Kipchoge versus Mo Farah. But Mo Farah's like 5 minutes slower than Kipchoge over the marathon on a legit course. Like they dream.
I don't think he's really had a full on dig at it yet. Like this guy here, just Mo Farah, he's coming from focusing on the track year in year out. He's got potential. He's won more championships than any of those guys.
Yeah, but was he running like 5 and 10s when it was a bit soft on the track, or the good big dogs were on the road?
Possibly, but he still got it done. Yeah, and he might not have the PBs of these other guys, but he knows how to compete. So I'm interested.
But you think he's got a shot against Kipchoge?
Well, he beat that Jeff Camworo who won New York.
Yeah, over 10K on the track. Different world on the roads. You know that, Brad. Yeah. You're a 29:40 guy and you can't convert yet.
Haven't had a proper track yet.
Get injured before you get there. Watch this space. I thought they were just drumming that up a bit, though, the whole Kipchoge-Mo Farah rivalry.
6 months
ago. Kipchoge would definitely go in his favourite.
Yeah, for sure. What's Mo Farah going to run at London, Julian? What do you reckon?
If there was no paces, it would be a fantastic race. I know London does use paces, but if they went without paces, that would be just amazing to watch, because that would turn into a little bit of, like, but not a little bit, that would be a competition right there, those two going at it.
But didn't that happen? Remember when he ran it a couple of years ago? And didn't they just all burn him anyway? Like, they were like, you're the track guy coming over to the marathon. Let's just run insanely fast the first 15K.
Yeah, but I reckon that was when he was still a track guy. Like, he's got it. He's eyed this off for a long time, and he's moving to it.
Mm. He'd be on big coin to rock up there, I reckon. They'd be paying him very well.
Yeah, he won't have to run again after this one.
Big expectations, though, home crowd.
Yeah.
General punters over there be expecting him to win it.
Yeah, they definitely. He will be expected to win for sure, especially with the money he's getting paid to front up.
Yeah. Very good. Let's move to the USA. The USA Marathon Championships, Julian.
Yeah, well, this is one that I keep an eye on every year.
You slagged it off before in the past, this one.
Have I?
Yeah. Now, when I was just reading the notes you were putting together for this show, I remember you slagging this marathon off one week.
No.
Yeah, you just said, mate, when we were talking about New York Marathon in one of the earlier episodes, and you said most of the USA guys will go to like a downhill course like this one.
Yeah, I mean, that's not slagging off.
No, it is.
CIM, California International Marathon, it's in Sacramento. So it's a point-to-point course. I think it drops 2.5 meters per kilometer average over the 42 kilometers. So net downhill. It's close to where I went to school at Chico. So a lot of the guys who used to run for Chico, they do their first marathon there, or they always go back. It's a race that everyone goes to get their Olympic trials qualifier because it is net downhill, but you don't get the top dogs there because if you run fast, it's not actually counted as an Olympic qualifier because of the net downhill. So the US use it. It's okay for them to get to the trials, but it won't count if they actually run a 2:11 or whatever it is to get them to the Olympics. So heaps of guys in the 2:14 to sort of 2:25 range there want to run fast, going for the trials. It was won this year by Tim Ritchie, who is you've probably never heard of him before, but he's got a 61-minute half. He ran 2:11 and he came back late. There were a couple of blokes who had a crack. One of them was John Gray, who is a trail mountain runner over there. And he went out hard and he was chasing Parker Stinson, who used to run for Oregon. He trains in Colorado now. But he went out really hard. Then he kind of blew up, got a stitch or something, had to really slow down. I think he might have even pulled out.
He came like maybe 30th or something, I think, in the end.
Oh, did he? Yeah. He made it through, yeah. Or John Gray. 2:18, yeah. John Gray, he finished in 2:20. So that's 1 and 2 finishing in 2:18 and 2:20. And then Tim Ritchie came through from the previous pack to win the race. A couple of guys who I know, one guy, Anthony Costales, he ran on the team that I was at Chico, and he was kind of running around the same times as me. He ran 8:20 in a race that I ran 8:21 in a 3K. And now he went on and did some cool stuff. I think he ran 14 minutes last year for 5K. But this is a bloke whose PB is 29:39 for the 10K. Similar to yours, Brad?
Yeah.
Well, he went off and ran 2:13 in this race. So 2:13:11. So that is seriously moving. And I've read a couple of Instagram posts from a few of the boys who said the first workout that he rocked up to, he had like 4 by a mile at 5:05 pace, and he struggled through it. And now he's ran 5:05 pace for a marathon and nailed it. And that's I look at this and go, this guy works as a teacher in Utah. He basically like has a full-time job. He's come from very kind of humble running beginnings, and he has just blasted this race. This is one of the all-time runs that I've heard of. So I was pretty stoked to see that happen. Sarah Hall won the ladies. She only ran a marathon like 5 weeks ago in Frankfurt. And she won quite convincingly, 2:28. I think she was 90 seconds ahead. So that was handy from her.
Yeah, it'd be a good race to go to if you were traveling, wouldn't it? Go over there. But Utah and the qualifiers don't count. So if you wanted to try and hit a Cobb Games or World Champs qualifier,
it
would count towards going to the American trials. That's it.
If you're a citizen there, you could go to the trials.
Interesting.
It's an interesting one, yeah. And
you think it's one or the other, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think they use it just like they have a bit of a slower time to get guys. Like every A qualifier for the trials, or every qualifier got like $1,500 bonus or something like that. Might have been Olympic qualifier. And then the B's got a qualifier as well. Got some money or something like that. So they really shape it as like, this is going to be a deep field. And it was crazy deep.
Well, the B qualifier was 219, wasn't it? So there's just a huge group going at 218 high.
Yeah, heaps of people.
Yeah. Hey, listener question this week. We've got two. First, we've got two because the first one, I don't know if Brad and I can even answer it, so it's going straight to the wise man. Comes from Simon Mason. Wondering what your thoughts are on using power for training rather than traditional heart rate and your pace, given that running power meters are starting to be introduced. Gearman, tell us. I don't know anything about this. I've said, is it Stride? Is that the brand?
Stride is one of the brands.
That's all I know. Do you know anything, Brad?
No, not really. Like, I know about power meters when it comes to cycling.
Give it straight to the wise man.
Yeah, but I reckon heart rate's the sign of intensity. So,
I think with this technology, firstly, it's not as simple as just saying, oh, cycling, it works in cycling, because there's no real conclusive way of measuring the wattage that you're putting out when you're running. So that's the way these guys do it is they put a pod on your shoe and it doesn't accurately measure the force that you're putting out. It's an estimation. Whereas with cycling, it's a lot more accurate. So firstly, the measurement is a little bit suspect, which is as soon as you start getting that, just like wrist heart rate, as soon as you start getting some suspect sort of measurements, you have to question the validity of it in your training. Secondly, you have to know how to use it. So say you're getting accurate data, or you think you're getting accurate data, you have to know how to use that data in a training program. So firstly, what those numbers mean, and then how to apply it to your training program. And unless you're pretty well versed in wattage and I guess training philosophy using wattage and using power, it's quite difficult to do. So just like when someone goes out and buys a $1,000 Garmin and they're getting all this vertical oscillation.
Didn't Brad do this?
He did something like this.
Yeah, I don't get all that stuff.
Exactly. So all that stuff means jack shit if you don't know what to do with it. Or you don't know what it means, if it's good, bad, or whether how to change it. So it's just this ridiculous stuff. Not to say that power meters aren't ridiculous, because I think when they start to hone it and we get a lot more, it gets a lot more field use, basically, by people picking it up, people that know what they're doing, taking it out and using it. But the concept is, if you find the power that you're putting out, you get a lot more accurate kind of threshold zone. So instead of looking at heart rate, which is pretty good to do that, I guess, like if you're into heart rate, then that's a pretty accurate way of running the threshold. Well, power gives you a similar baseline to follow. So if you find out, I know I can run for 200 watts, I've got an hour at 200 watts, I know what I can push. Or that's what a cyclist would do. But if you go for a marathon, I know I can handle 2 hours at 185 watts. And if I go above that, I'm going to cook myself. And so I have to keep it at that. So it's basically imposing almost a limitation on you for your races. It can give you training zones, I guess. I think what the company, because they know that it's not that good at actually measuring wattage, is that they try to tell you that it's a good measurement of how efficient your form is. So how much power you're getting from form, from your running stride, whether your power outage is decreasing towards the end of a run means your form is failing. And so they're more pushing it towards that side of things, where you can make adjustments to your form and technique to increase or maintain power towards the end. So I think it needs a few more years of work, testing, need to see a few more coaches get hold of it and actually test it on some athletes before I'd want to start playing around with it.
Yeah, good one. Good response. I've learned something myself tonight. Well done. John Dutton, regular listener of the show, marathon man, sends in this next question. If there were a race anywhere in the world that you would love to do, what race is it? Any distance, terrain, or discipline? Brad, what do you reckon?
I've got a couple here. So one would be to go back and actually complete Berlin after my failed attempt earlier this year. So that's one. And then a couple of other crazy races, which I'll look at doing one day, maybe. Point Pinnacle is another one that I'd love to do. And this one is just, the thought of it's cool, but I don't know whether I could actually commit to it. Would be, have you guys boys heard of Costa Kosciuszko?
No.
Yeah, I've heard of
that. So, yeah, so it starts in Eden and you run to the top of Mount Kosciuszko and then back down to Charlotte's Pass. It's 240K.
It's the stupidest race I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I know. It's, I don't know. It's off, I think it's on this coming weekend, and it's just, I don't know, I guess growing up down the south coast, and I don't know, it'd just be cool to say that you've done it, but I don't know if I don't think that's the type of runner I am to be able to run 240K, but it'd be cool achievement.
I've followed this a bit, actually, this race, just being a little bit in the ultra community, and it's pretty intense. Like, it's pretty much a non-stop climb up to Kosciuszko, and there's like dirt roads and you're running on asphalt a lot of the way. It's gross. Like, it's a hard run.
Yeah.
You're saying Brad couldn't do it?
No, I don't think he could.
I don't think I could at the moment. That's sure.
When's it on?
It's on this weekend.
Come on, Brad, you can do it. Stitch him up.
And that's the other thing as well. Like, this time of year to do that, like, it's hot.
Yeah.
And you're out there all day and you got to come up over the Great Dividing Range, which I think that's probably harder than the Kosciuszko bit, I reckon, coming from Eden up to the Tablelands. But anyway, that's a bit of a pipe dream.
Good luck with that. Julian, got any crazy ultras or trail runs in here? This would be interesting, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to do Western States 100, which is pretty much like the 100-miler that everyone looks at each year. It's a runner's race. It's not, there's like not crazy amounts of climb. Oh, there's a lot of climbing over 100 miles, but it's not a climber's race. It's a runner's race. It's just outside of Sacramento, and you start at Squaw Valley and around Lake Tahoe, and you run down into, I think you finish near Rockland in Sacramento, and it's really cool. Like, it's net downhill, but you go through a lot of hot valleys, and it's the race that people look to see who's the king at the moment in ultras, basically.
Had a serious think about doing it?
Oh, it's still 100 miles, which is about 120K further than I like to go at the moment. So eventually when I... Maybe to, like, you have to qualify. It's hard to get in. You just need to commit a year to actually qualify to get in, and then you need another year to really commit to it, I think. So down the track, maybe.
Yeah, cool. I reckon for me, I'd love to just do New York. I reckon that's I've just read so many books and watched so many documentaries, and I'm reading Fred LeBeau's book at the moment, and, yeah, it's just an amazing race by the sounds of things, and, you know, not really be focused on running a fast time, but just enjoying running through those crowds and the boroughs and just getting the whole kind of New York experience, and probably the biggest marathon in the world. Ideally, it'd be good to tick off all the marathon majors. Actually, Chicago doesn't really appeal to me, but Boston and London and Tokyo, obviously already ran Berlin. So, yeah, those marathon majors would be my answer to that question. John Dutton. Thanks for sending that in. Moose on the Loose, the last segment for the night before we introduce our guest. What do we got this week?
Yeah.
I was reading the iTunes reviews today and someone wrote in saying this is the best segment of the show.
Well, I'm not going to get super loose tonight because it's not something that drives me insane, but I think it's more just like, I think we need to set a global rule for... When a group meets for a run, there has to be a set rule for how long we wait until we leave the car park or the trail or we start our warm up. So I know there's nothing worse than getting to a run at say the run starts at 8:30 and we get there, we all get there at 25 past. It's good to talk some shit for 5 minutes, make fun of each other, see who's hungover. And then it gets to 8:30 and you're looking around and you're like, hey, isn't this bloke coming? Isn't he coming? Oh, I wonder where he is. And then he sent no message. There's been no, hey, I'm going to be a few minutes late. Can you wait for me? It's like 2 minutes is the rule. I think 2 minutes is just the generally accepted rule. Anything longer than 2 minutes and they know where the run's going, they can catch you. Anything less than 2 minutes will give them the benefit of the doubt, but it shouldn't matter who it is. It could be the best guy in the group or it could be the worst guy in the group. It can be someone who's never even been there before. But if they're 2 minutes late, then they'll find you out on the bush somewhere. Or they'll know where the warm-up is. They know where the session starts from. They can do their own warm-up. There's nothing worse than being there for like 10, 15 minutes waiting around until someone shows up who's, I don't know, rolled out of bed late, had to stop for a coffee, whatever. It's just not on. So, and I think that's all right. If you're late, you know the rule, 2 minutes late, oh shit, these boys are going to have gone. I'll find them or I'll catch up. I'll run faster to catch up. That's on you if you're late. Okay, rant over.
Mm. What about if you're just meeting like two or three mates and you're like, do they still wait? Because then
2 minutes.
2 minutes, you still reckon.
They'll know where you're going.
What happens if it's a big dog who's late, like Collis is 2 minutes late? You guys going?
It depends. You know,
it actually does depend who goes.
I would go, yeah. But then you've got like little some groupies. They'll want to wait because they don't want to run with you. They want to run with him. So it's a little bit interesting there because I would be pushing to leave after 2 minutes.
Have you ever noticed when you go to Falls Creek, the group leaves when the Melbourne Track Club gets there? I'm not taking the piss. That's just actually what happens.
Yeah, I haven't. I've only done one run up there ever, so I didn't really take much notice.
I completely agree with you on this one, Julian. I've been to a few group runs where you're still waiting around like 10 minutes later, waiting for a person, and I'm just like, well, you know, how long do we wait? Like it happened a couple of weeks ago down here in Canberra, we're waiting for somebody, and
who was late?
James Nipperis.
Yeah, call him out, so, bud.
But he never turned up anyway. So because I messaged
a message.
Him, I messaged him on the Saturday night asking him where his group was training the next morning, and he said 8 o'clock at Dixon Ovals. So I was there, and everybody else rocked up, like Jordan Guzman, and they're like, "Oh, isn't Nipper coming?" And we seriously waited for 10 minutes, and then it's like he never showed. So we could have been there for 2 hours waiting for him, or longer.
Did you mention two minute rule?
No, because I didn't know it was 2 minutes at that point.
I do now.
Now we know.
The other rule that a group in Canberra used to have was they only wait for world champions, which there's
not a bad rule, actually.
You're pretty safe when it comes to running with world champions in Australia.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. Yeah, I reckon that's pretty fair. That's pretty fair. Good moose on the loose for another week. Brad, yes. That's it for the show this week. Thanks for tuning in. But before we go, Brad's got to introduce the guest for this week. Doing something different. We've got a pretty big name and we wanted to talk to him for an extended period of time. So we're going to split it into part one and part two. So you'll hear part one this week and part two next week. Thanks everyone who's tuned in again. And Brad, tell us who this guest is.
Yeah, so the guest is Sean Crichton. We've mentioned him in the last couple of podcasts. So I guess he's the Australian 3K steeplechase record holder at the moment. He's also now the Australian over 50s 5K record holder. But he probably, you could argue that he's the most versatile distance runner Australia has ever had. He's run 3:38 for 1500 all the way through to 2:10:20 for the marathon. So that's an amazing spread. Like there's not many guys that have been able to run so well over every distance. I guess another claim to fame was back in 1996, he broke Ron Clark's long-standing 10K record. I think it stood for 31 years. So that's pretty significant back in 1996. So won't give too much away, but yeah, he's obviously super talent, went to a couple of Olympics, and loves a yarn. So, yeah, look forward to getting him on.
Do you know him pretty well, Brad?
Yeah. I never knew him when he was, like, running, I guess, elite. But I guess over the last 10 years, I've got to know him pretty well. And him and his wife came to our wedding. So, yeah, I know him quite well.
Mm. Big name to have at your wedding, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Real big name. Rightio, fellas. Thanks for tuning in again. What's coming up this week? Brad, what do you got? What's happening?
I've got 5 by 1,200 metre hills tomorrow. I've never done anything like that before. Yeah, so
your coach is really mixing things up, I'm feeling, this time around.
Yeah, so it's a different week. So I've got that. I've got 2 hours on Wednesday, a couple of 5K reps Friday, and then a double Sunday. So I think Sunday's will work out around 42K with by the time I do 2 runs. So big week, but just all strength.
Mm. Julian, getting back on the rails?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the track on Tuesday and Thursday. I want to get used to this thing. Saturday, I'll do a longer tempo. And, yeah, just a pretty standard week for me. The sessions will be something like 2K reps on the track Tuesday, and then on Thursday I'll probably do some 400s a bit faster.
Cool. I don't know what I'm doing yet. After our counselling session a couple of weeks ago, my coach just tells me the session the night before now, so I don't get too fixated and overthink it and things like that. So I'll wait till we get a message tomorrow. He stitched me up the other day. I was trying to get a treadmill session done instead of those shorter reps, and I thought because it was raining he might just let me go on the treadmill for half an hour at heart rate, but he said take your flippers out if it's that wet. So he's got a bit of humor going as well, so not sure what I'm doing. Counting down the end of the school year, Brad. We're nearly on holidays for 6 weeks.
Yeah, I've got one more lesson to teach,
and then holidays coming up, Julian.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not into this. Couple of teachings taking my money.
Catholic schools, mate. You're not contributing to Catholic schools.
I think I am.
Yeah, well, you are. We get a bit of government money. That was a lie. Yeah. Sorry, Brad, I cut you off. What are you doing? One more day of teaching.
Yeah, I've got one more class. Yeah, tomorrow. And then, yeah, they've got like a modified lessons for the rest of the week. And then, yeah, that's it.
High school teaching, that was so easy. We've got to work up to the 22nd of December. Ripped off. Anyway. Let's do it. Thanks, boys. Thanks for your time again. Good luck training. And we'll talk again next week.
See you, Brady.
See you, boys.
All right, I'm here with our latest guests for Inside Running, Mr. Sean Crichton. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Croaks. It's always nice to share a chat and a glass of red wine. So
yeah, it's
a pleasure to be here.
Great to celebrate your newest Australian record. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's probably a bit of a silly Australian record, an old man Australian record, but it's good fun. It's like anything. It's nice to set a goal to go after. So it was, even though it's not like setting an open Australian record, it was nice to see that goal sitting there and go after it and get it. So yeah, thanks.
Well, we'll touch on that a little bit later on, but I introduced you to the listeners as arguably Australia's most versatile runner we've ever had, with, you know, PBs in the 1500 of 3:38 all the way through to the marathon at 2:10. But I've sort of been told lately that a lot of people, you know, the younger generations don't really know much about you. So we might go back to how you got involved with running. And I believe you weren't a standout as a junior.
No, that's right. I got into running it's funny, there's a few guys who I did run with at high school who in social media these days. So Paul Arthur, for example, posted a photo on a couple of photos on Facebook a couple of years ago. I said, "Oh, yeah, Paulie, I'm in that photo. Right, you can see me right in the blob in the background." He said, "I had no idea you were in those races," which you wouldn't have because I was too far back. You sort of, you only remember the guys you head-to-head with.
Yep.
But I went around to play football with one of my mates when I was 10 years old, and he was off to Little Athletics. I said, "Oh, I'm not doing anything. I may as well come down." So I started doing Little Athletics when I was 10. And I didn't stop running after that, but I guess the big difference was I was living in Glen Innes at the time. I was Glen Innes age Northern New South Wales age 1 to 10, and then Armidale Northern New South Wales from age 11 to 19. So we were 500 k's to the nearest track. So for summer, we'd go to the beach for 6 weeks. The idea of going and doing track races over summer was just not something I did. So, and I played a lot of sports. So I was in the, as you know, I like my rugby league. I was in the regional rugby league team. I was one of Armidale's best squash players. Even though we've got the cricket on, I was a hopeless cricketer, but used to enjoy it. So I played all sports, but I guess I kept coming back to running and I kept doing it, but I didn't ever really start training properly and probably until I was last year at high school, and then I started to ramp it up quite a bit. But I'd make the Northwest New South Wales cross country team each year, go down the state championships. People are often amazed to know how far back I was. I came 54th in my, I think it was 52nd, 54th, 52nd in year 7, then still in the 50s in year 8, and then 27th in year 9, and 22nd in year 10, 13th in year 11, and then finally in year 12 I came 5th and made the New South Wales team, which is what I'd always wanted to do, was make this the New South Wales team. And then that I thought that would probably be about the highlight of my career. And went on. In fact, I came 5th in New South Wales, and then I came 4th in the national schools. So that was a massive step up. Big turning point for me, though. I stayed in Armidale when I finished school, studied accountancy and at night, and was working as an accountant during the day. And having worked with me, Croaks, you know, I'm not good with numbers, so that was a foolish decision. But I realised that wasn't for me, so I came down for the World Cross Country Trials in January of 1986 for the junior team. And I decided if I made the team, I would move to Canberra and get serious with my running. If I didn't, my mate and who I was doing accountancy with and I would take off around Australia for a year.
Yeah.
I came 10th and they took the first six. And in fact, Tim Redwin, who came 9th, just posted on Facebook a photo of the top 10 banner of the finish, which I once had. And it was good to see that photo again. But that Australian team came 4th in the World Junior Cross Country that year. Mm-hmm. So some very, very good junior athletes, Tony Ford and Jason Agosta and some other very, Dean Paul, and very good juniors. None of them went on with it. And it's a fascinating stat that I was, out of that top 10, I was the only one who made an Australian senior cross-country team, and I made 9 of them and probably could have made more. So then I got going around Australia. So I took off around Australia for the year and I didn't know what I wanted to do. About halfway around going around Australia, I thought, okay, I want to do phys ed, non-teaching phys ed. A guy from Peter La Rosignon, who'd been helping me with my coaching in Armidale, he'd moved to, it was just good old-fashioned good luck, he'd moved to Ballarat as a lecturer in exercise physiology at Ballarat Uni, and he said, oh, come down to Ballarat. And because I'd had a year out as accountancy and a year travelling, I was deemed to, at the ripe old age of 19, to be a mature age student. So I didn't get enough. I was, even though I wasn't deadly serious about my running, my HSE comprised of sitting in my room every night reading running magazines.
Right.
So I didn't get great marks at school, but I managed to get into phys ed at Ballarat. Did my interview, borrowed Pete La Rosignon's suit on the way back through Ballarat on my way back from going around Australia, got accepted into Ballarat Uni, so rolled up in February 87 as a 19-year-old to do phys ed, and that was the absolute turning point for me for running. That changed everything.
And who was coaching you, I guess, up until that point and then when you first moved to Ballarat?
Yeah, so I didn't have a coach until after I left school. In 1985, so I finished school in 84, I went to the big local fun run, it was the Tamworth 10, and this is when I was working as a trainee accountant. I went down to the Tamworth 10 expecting to win it in about 33 minutes in 1985, so when I was 18, and I went head-to-head with Rocket Rod Higgins, who was from Corindai, just near Tamworth, who went on to be a 13-28 and 28-10 guy in his own right. Rocket blew me out of the water, and I came 5th in 35 minutes. So I was so despondent. I went back and pre-internet by a decade, of course. So I went and got the old New South Wales Athletics Almanac out, looked at who the coaches were, and it's all Pete LaRosignon, who I knew and respected, who was in our club, and asked him to coach me. So he started coaching me when I was 18. Then when I was 19, I went off around Australia, so didn't really run that much. And then so Pete, then when I moved to Ballarat, was my coach.
Yeah. And I guess Julian, who's a host on Inside Running,
yeah.
he lives in Ballarat at the moment. And so was there the strong running culture back then that there has been now?
I'd say more so. When I got to Ballarat, to make the A-grade Sandown team was a real achievement. But the thing that struck me was, so I moved to Ballarat and my PB for 5K was 15:11. My first week at university, I thought I was in a bit of trouble because I got called out of a lecture in week one. I was like, God, bloody hell, I don't even know anyone at Ballarat. How am I getting called out of a lecture? I had not playing up. And it was someone from one of the athletics clubs. Oh, we heard you moved to town. We're interested in get you to meet the boys. Within my first 10 days in Ballarat, I had all four clubs say, we'd love to have you join our club.
Yeah, okay.
And, I mean, that's... Yeah. You don't move any... It probably doesn't happen anymore.
No.
And it was really strong. So I ended up joining Ballarat YCW, which was Mona's club. And we had a really, really strong club. And so it was genuinely, I mean, the Ballarat Combined Club now, it's sacrilegious. It's only 10 years ago we were winning Sandown outright, let alone the four clubs combined for a Ballarat Combined. But in that time, in my 3 years in Ballarat, we won Sandown twice and broke the long-standing course record, which was Ron Clark and Trevor Vincent and Chloe and those guys. So our Sandown team of six in 87... It was Mona, myself, Hector Beggio, who was a Filipino Olympic steeplechaser, who'd run 8:30, Wayne Dyer, who was Australian steeplechase champion around the time, was an 8:35 guy, John Walsh, sub-14 5K runner, and Dennis Boyle, who was maybe 14:02.
Yeah.
So our slowest guy was 14:02.
Yeah, and we had so much depth.
We had 14, 25K runners who couldn't make... Yeah. Who were in our B-grade team. I mean, these days you'd stroll into it. So I guess my point is there were so many guys to train with.
Yeah.
And that was just our club.
Yeah.
At Wenderee, you had Merv and Mal Johnston. Merv was a 215 runner in the 80s. No one probably would have heard of Merv, fantastic runner.
Yeah.
Then you had Ballarat Harriers and Eureka, who still had plenty of good sort of 15-minute 5K guys.
Yeah.
It was, and you'd go to you didn't need to go to Melbourne to race. There was always, you wanted to race any weekend in Ballarat, cross country or summer. It was great.
And so I know that your long-term coach was Pat Clohessy.
Yeah.
So how long were you in Ballarat for, and then how did you come across Clo?
Yeah, so I was in Ballarat 3 years, 87, 88 and 89. I made the World Student Cross Country team in 88, and then in 89 I got injured and got symphysis pubis or whatever it's called on the hip, and it meant that it was a blessing in disguise. It meant I couldn't run fast because knee flexion, hip flexion, whatever, is what aggravated it. But I could run slow until the cows came home. So all of a sudden, at age 21, I started doing 100 miles a week. Just long, slow running.
Mm.
And when it finally came good and I added some speed work to it, I just improved an absolute rate of knots because I had this phenomenal base. So what actually helped me, and it's timely with very reasonable Commonwealth Games selection criteria now, I didn't really think I was a chance to make the Commonwealth Games team for 1990. My steeplechase PB was 9:04, and I thought that was going to be the event I'd have the best chance at. Tony Benson was the national coach at Athletics Australia at the time, and he was from Ballarat. And I still remember, I'm not sure if Tony told me or I've heard on the grapevine or saw it, again, pre-internet, so he didn't just look it up. But the word came out that the Commonwealth Games qualifying time for the steeple was 8:42. I was like, well, I know I've only run 9:04, but I thought the Commonwealth Games qualifier would be 8:30 or 8:32, which I thought was unattainable. 8:42, I thought, I reckon I can run that. It's a massive PB, so it it really focused me, and I started, you know, gave up drinking so much beer and, you know, and stripped the weight down and really focused for a few months and got really fit. So my first steeplechase of the year, which was my first steeplechase in 18 months, I rolled up. I thought, I'm just going to run 8:42 pace as long as I can. Yeah. And I ran 8:39.
And so you put that down to that just base that you had laid?
That base, but then top the base and then topping it up with some good specific work and having a carrot which was achievable, yeah, which then just gave me something to focus on. All of that, and being in a good training environment,
yeah,
all of those factors just combined to then think, okay, I'm gonna, if I don't make this time, it's not gonna be through not having a crack at it. So going back to when Chloe started to coach me, so and put it in context, the fastest steeplechase time in the previous 4 or 5 years by an Australian was 8:45. Yeah. So I'd just run quite a bit faster than anyone had run for 5 or 6 years in Australia. Yeah. So the next day, Pat Clohesi called me and said, oh, great run. And said, I don't know what your plans are, but you got any interest in coming up to Canberra to the AIS? And I absolutely loved living in Ballarat, absolutely loved training in Ballarat and thought the world of the guys and the club, and I stayed running for the club for several years. Mm-hmm. But that was November of 89. I had 3 weeks left of my degree, and I hadn't actually decided what I was going to do when I finished my degree, so he didn't have to ask me twice, so yeah. I moved, spent the next few weeks finishing up my degree, packed up and moved up to Canberra. Yeah.
Just on a slight tangent, because Julian constantly whinges about the weather in Ballarat, and we've lived in both Ballarat and Canberra. Where's worse?
Oh, Ballarat's far worse than Canberra.
Can't say that.
the Ballarat's good running weather, but people poo-poo Canberra's weather. I love Canberra's weather. It's four seasons. The difference between a Ballarat winter's day and a Canberra's winter's day, Canberra will be significantly colder, but won't be drizzly other than today. It won't be drizzly rain and windy. Ballarat won't be as cold, but it'll feel colder.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So now I guess we'll just touch on how your week, when you were in your prime, basically how a week looked for you.
That's a good question, and the answer, and I'm a lawyer these days, and the classic lawyer answer is it all depends. So I could give you my structure, and then it depended on what I was training for. So it was always Monday, which is very much the Pat Clough and the Chris Wardlaw and I guess the Australian system. Monday and Friday were always easy. And so second run of the day was always 8 or 9K, done at 4.5 to 5 minute Ks, pretty slow.
Yeah.
Monday and Friday were always 16K, pretty gentle. Wednesday was, if I was training for 1500 3K, it was 90 minutes. If I was training for 10K, it would be 1:45. If I was training for a marathon, it would be 2 hours. Sunday, if I was training 15 steeple, I'd still do 2 to 2:15. If I was training for marathon, 10K, it would be 2.5. If I was training for a marathon, 2:30 to 2:45 with the occasional 3 hour run. And then always Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday sessions. And that varied. What those sessions were varied on what event I was doing and what time of year it was. Because if I was doing track, I'd be doing the Australian and the European track season. So it wasn't the strict periodisation, but it really varied. There was a lot of tempo runs and hill surges and things like that in the build-up.
Yep.
And then getting on the track really only a few weeks before I'd go to Europe and then do track sessions and races throughout the season.
Mm.
Interestingly though, I would often run my best early in the season when I got there, and so the not doing a lot of track work worked well for me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was probably because I had reasonable natural speed, so my weakness was my endurance or that real just above threshold type work. So doing a lot of that helped work on that weakness.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I never got to train with you when you're at your peak. But I've heard numerous stories where you obviously ran your easy days like super easy, and I know that you're still quite renowned for taking the easy days really easy. But even in sessions, there was guys that, and obviously Canberra and I guess Ballarat as well, had a lot of depth, and obviously with the AIS program, but there was times where, probably most times, you're often towed up in training sessions, but then those guys that were beating you in training wouldn't come close to you in races. And it takes a lot of discipline, I think, to let, you know, the ego out of it and obviously train within yourself. And like, how did you learn that? Was that through your coach? Was it through training with Africans as your career developed? Or
it's a very good question, and I think some of the young guys around, probably if they ever listen to me, they'll probably get tired of me saying you need to. There's times to train hard and there's times to recover. If I go right the way back, doing human movement at Ballarat was. I mean, part of that was just I had a real, I was like a lot of young runners, just absolutely full into it, full on into it, and I wanted to learn as much as I could about running, not so much about developing a career. I wanted to learn about running, and one of the things which really stood out to me, and I always remembered in doing coaching theory and methodology, and there was a guy Tudor Bomper who did a book on periodization, and it was almost training theory 101, and it seems simple, but a lot of people don't get it. And that is, in order to improve, and that's what we're of course trying to do, you need to stress your body. Most people do that well. Then you need to recover, so that when you stress your body again and you stress it a bit more, your body supercompensates. Now that's all very simple. But if you're missing the recovery element, you're not getting the super compensation.
Yeah.
And it's so following that through, the purpose of your recovery runs isn't to get fitter. Mm. So the difference between running 350 or 450 per K, to me, and I might be wrong, it's you're actually better off probably running 450 than you are. I know you don't like running 450, crap, it's too slow for you. But if you can run 350 and be recovered, good on you. I couldn't. If I ran 350, I'd be tired the next day. I needed to run slower, so I did. And also, I think Pat Clough drummed into me, you know, no super sessions, but I was really lucky in my career that some of the people I trained with were the absolute best in the world. And I saw what they did, and it actually reflected exactly my philosophy, so I didn't need to change it. When I moved to Ballarat in 87, Mona came fourth in the world champs that year.
Yeah.
He came fifth in the Olympics in 88. You ask anyone who ever trained with Mona. Back in the 80s, he was training with guys who were, he's come fourth and fifth in the world. He was training with 14-minute 5K runners.
Yeah.
He was, you know, and he's long, we'd have a club run on Friday nights around the lake.
Yeah.
It was slow.
Yeah.
You know, the Sunday long run, there was plenty of 3-hour marathoners and 2-hour 40 marathon runners in our group. It wasn't a pack of 2:10 marathon runners. And it was just week in, week out. Then I moved to Canberra, and Deke still won Rotterdam in 91, and I was doing a lot of the training with him. There was no super training. It was consistent training every year. Then in 91, I shared a house from 91 to 94 with Simon Doyle. In 1991, Dorley ran 3:31 for 1,500 metres, which was only Norah and Morsley ran quicker than Dorley between 90 and 94, that half decade. Same thing. We used to just jog easy.
Yeah.
The sessions were quick, and they were specific, but they weren't. You wouldn't leave the session thinking that you're absolutely smashed. Then I shared a house one summer with Patrick Sang, who's now
Kipchoge's coach.
So Patrick and I trained the whole summer together. Patrick came second at the World Champs, and I came ninth at the World Champs the year before in the steeple. But Patrick's recovery runs, I was famous for training slow. I came back and I said to the boys, you got no idea.
Yeah.
I was almost falling over myself, it was so slow. But he'd go long on Sunday, and then we'd go to the track, and a couple of days I'd do the session with Patrick. was about the only time I couldn't finish a session. It was too quick for me. Mm. And Patrick wasn't blessed with phenomenal leg speed, but it was quick.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go down to the track and do K reps in 2:35. But if you'd have backed it up with 20K at 3:50s the next day rather than 20Ks at 4:50s, he would have been too tired.
Yeah.
And so it was 94. Then 95, I trained with Frank O'Mara in Limerick, and Frank was twice world indoor champion. And we did the same thing. We did some great track sessions, but geez, we did some slow recovery runs.
Yeah. It just goes to show, though, like the influences that the people around you have on you.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, like I know I run too fast on my easy days, even though it doesn't feel like I'm doing a session.
Yeah.
But I guess my introduction to running was using the school treadmill and
pumping
it up to 16K an hour for 20 minutes every day. So that was my introduction to running. So that's 3:45s every day.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was introduced to running and I was training with you, then my training might be completely different. But you have inspired me. Maybe tomorrow I'll have a run slower than 4:30. But actually, I did have two runs yesterday, 4:25 and 4:20. So that's pretty good for me.
That is good.
So,
well, I've just started coaching Emily Brickacek in the last few months. And as recently as tonight, as we're warming down from a training session, she said, "Oh, feeling so good on Tuesdays these days because I'm not tired after the Sunday long run."
Yeah.
Because I've encouraged her to run with me on Sundays, so she goes a bit slower.
Yeah, I know Nipper, her partner, was complaining that she would often drop him on training runs. So, I guess with your versatility, did you have a favourite event out of everything? Like, you know, you've achieved a lot and you've run well over all those distances. A favourite?
I love the steeplechase.
Yeah.
And it's... Yeah, I'm trying to talk Jordan Guzman into doing it now. He can run a good 3K and he can hurdle. You know, the 1500 and the 5K are pretty well oversubscribed for Com Games. The 1500, the steeple's sitting there. It's easy pickings. People think it's the easy option. It's not the easy option. It's an Olympic event. They've got the gold medal's got just as much gold in it as other events. And it's a terrific event because I think 3K was about my best distance.
Yeah.
And even though I couldn't hurdle, I could get over the barriers, and it was all about. It's different because it's a bit like cross country on the track. It's a bit funny because I was a rhythm runner, but I didn't lose my rhythm in the steeplechase.
Yeah,
and I love the steeplechase. I enjoyed them all. If I had a bit more speed, I would have loved to have been a 1500 meter runner, but I wasn't quite. I mean, I was good at 1500, but I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Loved 10K. 5K, I reckon, is the hardest event on the track. People talk about the 800 being the hardest event on the track. To run a 5K properly, you've got to be redlining from K1.
Yeah.
And you get to five laps to go, and I hadn't done a 5K for 17 years until Saturday night, and I was like, God, they don't get any... With that five laps to go, it doesn't get any easier.
No.
5K is brutally tough, and I found it hard to absolutely nail it because you've got to go. If you leave yourself too much to do, you can't make it up. But you've got to go. You've got to go hard, but not too hard. Ten, you had a bit more margin for error. Marathon, and I felt I nailed some really good tens. I was satisfied with what I achieved at steeple. Even though I'd have loved to do a few more years at it, satisfied what I did at 10, felt I could have done more at 5, and very frustrated at the marathon. I felt I had a good minute in me in the marathon. Yeah. But against that, it's to pop at 2:10, I was very satisfied, but I felt that off the training I'd done and my 10K speed, I should have run quicker at the marathon.
I guess that's the marathon, though, isn't
that
it?
That is the marathon.
It is a cruel event, and you can't back up 2 weeks later. And,
exactly.
There's just so many variables that go into it. Mm. So we might touch on, actually, we'll touch on the marathon soon as well.
Yeah.
Just going back to that, you know, you would get beaten by your training partners and basically training within yourself, even in sessions, not giving 100%.
Yeah.
Like, I follow you on Strava, and even in the lead up to your recent 3K where you ran just over 9 minutes and you're 15:34, I think it's fair to say that other than maybe a couple of 200s before that 3K, you wouldn't have run a kilometre at 3:03.
That's funny you should say that, Craig.
But you can come out and race at that. And I know I'm guilty of, if I want to run 15 minutes for 5K,
yeah,
like, I would be definitely running stuff at sub 3 minutes, like, yeah, just more for a confidence thing, but you prove that you don't need to do that to race at that pace.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that. I was just saying to one of my mates who's a fellow lawyer and so thinks very logically, I said, what do you reckon my quickest K in the last decade is, other than downhill? So I think I've done a 2:55 down the gravel bluestone track at, coming down from the Pines at Bunker Hackett. But on the flat, quickest K, the answer's 3:04. And I said, and I expected to run low 9 minutes. Mm. He said, how could you possibly expect to? And I said, well, I know that come because I reserve a special place for a race that I don't ever hurt myself that badly in training, I'll hurt myself that badly in that much in a race. I know I can go faster. What I can do in training, I can go faster than that and keep going.
Yeah.
And I proved that wasn't just 20 years ago. I can still do it.
Yeah, and like you're obviously in the minority because most runners out there would leave the track on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Pretty much having given 100%.
Yeah.
And I look at like Pat Tiernan. Yeah. I was following him for a while with his training, and it probably seemed out of like
similar.
If you look at all the modern day runners, he's probably the guy that I see as being training the way that you trained, and I guess Chloe was an influence on him as well.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I've said to a few people who have asked that sort of question, how could you possibly have such a differential between your training and your racing? And the best way I can describe it, I know cars these days have got 6 gears, but let's just assume they have 5.
Yeah.
I will go to 4th gear in training, and I'll rev the heck out of it. And I'll finish thinking, geez, that was hard.
Mm.
But I don't put it into 5th gear.
Yeah.
5th gear is reserved for the race. And when it's races on, you go to 5th gear and you give it absolutely everything. Yeah. And you, I used to laugh when guys could warm down fast after a race. It's like, be so knackered from giving it absolutely everything. Yeah. How could you warm down?
So do you reckon if you're training at 4th gear, you have to race regularly to get that then?
No.
So you can just train at 4th gear for a long time and then come out and race well.
I think so. I think the trouble is if you're going into 5th gear in training, it's all right to do it occasionally. If you're doing it regularly, you've got nothing there when the question's asked on race day.
Yeah.
Because your mind's thinking, I actually think there's some adrenaline in it.
Yeah.
I don't recruit adrenaline in a training run.
Yeah.
In a race, I pull adrenaline.
It's funny you say that because on the podcast that we've just recorded, I mentioned to Brady. So Brady ran 14:51 at the Vic 5K a couple of weeks ago, and then came out this week and ran 10 by 1 minute off a 30-second float, and basically ran 15 minutes for 5K.
Yeah.
And I said to him, like, you're in spikes and you ran 14:51, and you're doing this in training. I said I couldn't train, I guess my easy runs are fast, but I could never get myself up for a session like that. And that's just, but I guess there's some guys that can somehow get the adrenaline maybe going in training, but I certainly couldn't do it.
I can't do it.
So I guess, all right, with your elite stuff, like you've achieved a lot, and a lot of people don't actually realise that, you know, you've held Australian records for the 3K, the current, you know, record holder for the steeplechase. You held the Australian 10K record and you broke Ron Clark's long-standing record. I think it was 31 years?
31 years, and the steeple which I broke was Kerry O'Brien's, which was 20 years.
Yeah. And then you've been to two Olympics, World Uni Games, you won gold twice there.
Yeah.
What's been the standout of, you know?
Yeah, the standout, it's really hard to pick a standout. Breaking Ron Clark's Australian 10K record with Ron Clark there, with Chloe there, with my mates Tim Armstrong and Robin Firth, who I'd shared a lot of running times with there, and my training partners Trent Harlow and a few guys in the race. That was really special. But you know, there's winning World Student Games was, that was, because that was my first Australian team, was making World Student Games, so winning the track and the cross country for World Student Games was special. And in the World Cups, so I got a bronze in 92 in the steeplechase in the World Cup and a silver in the World Cup in 98 in the 5K, and they were both very special for different reasons. In 92, I got controversially left out of the Olympic team, and, you know, there was... So you question yourself, you think, oh, I was starting to think I could compete internationally, and if the selectors don't think I can do that, well, maybe I'm not good enough. But so it was actually proving to myself and proving to them that I was to come out after the Olympics and take the bronze in the World Cup and beat guys who were in the Olympic final. That was, and then break the Australian record a few weeks later. That was really satisfying. And in 98, I'd really set myself for the World Cup. It was in Johannesburg, so at 1,800 metres altitude. So I put all my eggs in that basket. I trained for 8 weeks at altitude to try and get that result. So to finish behind Daniel Coleman, who at the time was the man, and beat Dieter Baumann, who was still one of the absolute best 5K runners in the world, was really satisfying.
And because I guess, like, you know, you broke the Australian 10K record in 96.
96, yeah.
And like 27-31, like where would have that ranked you in the world that year?
11th.
Yeah. And what about, so the year you broke the steeple record, where were you ranked?
11th.
There you go. Lucky number.
Yeah. So the steeple, I think they were satisfied. Track and Field News, which was always the Bible of running, it does a top 10 every year merit rankings based on a mix of times, championship result, head-to-head, and Track and Field News ranked me 10th for the steeplechase in 93. So that was probably, it sounds a bit funny, but the recognition by your peers and people who actually know to rank me top 10 in the world, that was even though it wasn't a race, that's a highlight of a good season.
All right, well, let's get to the second coming of Sean Crichton. So... When would you say that you sort of hung up the spikes professionally, or
There was no line in the sand of hanging them up. Yeah. Well, there sort of was, but there was no race I did which I thought that's my last race.
Yeah.
Which was, I know a lot of people would. Mine, I had Ballarat, Australia, you know, over and out in Sydney, even though I kept racing, of course. But I didn't. So So I ran the Com Games in 2001 I still ran 2:11 for a marathon. 2002 I ran 7:49 for 3K and made the Com Games marathon team. And then 2003 I was going pretty well and I thought I could make the marathon team for the 2004 Olympics. And my son William was born and about 3 weeks before Chicago, and I think I hurt my back getting him out of the cot because I was doing my third rep of some 4x1 mile behind the track at the AIS on the dirt, and I was like, this is the best set of miles I've done in since 2000. This is going great. And all of a sudden, bang, my calf went, and I think it was just my back. So I went to Chicago anyway, and I thought had to run 2:12, so I thought I'd run 5 minute miles as far as I can. And got 10 miles in basically 50 OO, feeling good, and my calf went, and so I had a small disc problem in my back that took about 6 weeks to get better. By then I was already I was working as a lawyer, and so it actually came time to whether I went and ran the trials for the 5 and 10 for the 2004 Olympics. I was like, you know what, I'm not going to get the time, and I'll probably go to nationals and come third or fourth, but I'd won the last couple of nationals. I'm not going to be one of these guys who's third this year, then fifth next year, and seventh the following year.
Yeah.
Even though I've now come back as an old man, but it's a break, so it's a very different thing. So I think I just decided. So I actually kept training for a little while and did a couple of road races, and then basically, I just stopped racing. I didn't. I always thought that I'd do another race, but I didn't.
stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin, I'll burn all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. Under the cover of my skin, I'll burn all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. And I'm gonna hold my head up high. I was taught as a young man, doesn't matter if you're white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet, doesn't matter if it don't come back. Undercover.